Welcome to the Holy Shit Podcast. Frank and Patsy get together to discuss the issues of the moment. You know, the things that make you say, holy shit. Here are your hosts, Master Hapkidoist, Patsy Zarilla, and Attorney Frank Natel, Esquire.
You know, it's just like that college chick told me. All that you gotta do is just ask them questions and listen to what they have to say and shit.
I don't know, man. That sounds like a lot of work.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Holy Shit, Season 2, Episode 4 for Wednesday, January 22nd, 2020. January 22nd already. God damn. I am your co-host, Master Patsy Zarilla.
And I'm co-host Frank Patel, and we're almost 1/12 of the way done with 2020 already.
You believe that? You know, Frank, honest to God, my father used to say, you know, the older you get, the quicker time flies. And boy, he wasn't kidding. He was not.
No. Not at all.
Unbelievable. We have an interesting piece of history going on here in the U.S. in the Senate right now, don't we?
Absolutely. You know, and I know people are going to be, you know, people are going to be talking about this today and this week and this month, and I'm sure all the news organizations have their people lined up, and there's going to be, you know, commentary on talk radio and commentary from wall to wall about this. And I think that, you know, what I'd like to do, what I'd like us to do about this today is not to take the typical, you know, what happened with the testimony, what happened with the rules, what happened with the rules committee, the dead of night, opening statements, those kind of things. I'd really rather just let's almost look into the future and apply maybe our own personal takes, our own personal knowledge, the history that we've lived through, the lives that we've lived, and maybe apply this to what we think the lens of history is gonna bear out. And then our generation and the future generations that live in this country that live with the results of this, whichever way it goes, you know, quite frankly, whichever way it goes. And I think that's what I'd like us to do today. Patsy, what do you think about that?
I think that's fantastic. So you know what, like we said before we started, I'm gonna leave it up to you, brother. You go ahead.
All right. Well, people are up and rightly so with the way things are going down in the Senate right now. You know, we alluded to it a little bit about talking about the opening statements in the dead of night. They're calling him Midnight, you know, Mitch. He's Moscow Mitch. He's Midnight Mitch. He's the majority leader, and he has the control, you know, and he's definitely exerting the control. That's Mitch McConnell. Mitch McConnell's up for election. He's up for re-election in 2020. He by no means is a shoo-in. You know, we talked last week about the long-term effects that this impeachment is going to have on the Republican Party, as we know the Republican Party, as our grandfathers knew the Republican Party. And I think that shaping politics, more so than just the Republican Party, I see this as a moment where we've almost reached this moment of everybody's resigned to know that people are so entrenched on each side of this that the result is not going to be in any way indicative of a fair and just trial. And I don't mean that from the perspective of a Democrat, a Republican, an independent. I mean that from the perspective of what our sense of fairness and justice was shaped as kids and as adults living in this country. We were taught to believe that no man was above the law. No man or woman was above the law. We were taught to believe that in a court of law, and this is what this is, the Senate is acting as a court, that there was a respect to be. I've lived my life long enough in a courtroom and in the real world to know that that doesn't always work that way. But I did know from experience in history, personal experience, that the further you took a matter up the ladder, the more likelihood you would have a uniform set of rules and an expectation to believe that a fair result and a just result would occur. Now, it may not be the result I wanted, but I could have an expectation that the rules would be applied uniformly, that I knew that the evidence that was being presented would be allowed in if it met a certain criteria. And I knew from when I first started the case that the evidence was going to get in, or if it wasn't going to get in, if it was going to be precluded, because there are rules, and we lived by the rules, and we worked within the framework of the rules. And if you had a quote-unquote kangaroo court or something that was akin to that, where you ran into a rogue ruler, a rogue judge in some backward county or something like that, you knew if you appealed it up, that wasn't going to stand. And if you appealed it up again, it wasn't going to stand. If you appealed it to the Supreme Court, it wasn't going to stand. So we had this sense of fairness and a sense of justice that we came to expect. That's not what's expected. I think it's just a matter of who has the political power now, who has the political clout to make the decisions at the moment. And that's really all that counts. And how is that going to shape society in America? How is that going to shape our expectations and our kids' expectations moving forward? I don't think it's for the better for our country. I don't think it's going to make America great. I think it's going to make America become a sense of how can we manipulate to gain the power that we need to get the result that we want. And that will be a naked truth. It will not be an undercurrent anymore. It will be a naked truth in the sense of people will calculate, and the calculus will be, how can we make sure that we gain power so that we can impose our collective will on everybody else? And that's so different than when we were growing up. There was a sense of compromise. There was a sense of maybe we're not going to get everything we want. Maybe, you know, the highway that goes from Newcastle to the Pittsburgh airport couldn't be built when we were, you know, 8, 10, 12 years old, 14 years old. We had to wait until, you know, Western Pennsylvania paid their dues with the Eastern Pennsylvania side of Pennsylvania getting everything they wanted first. And then they gave us what we wanted later on. And we had a highway that was built that got us to the Pittsburgh airport, you know, in 45 minutes, as opposed to an hour and 15 minutes. Because some politicians had to shake each other's hands and agree on when they were going to get something done. And they worked deals like that, whether they were Democrats, Republicans, or Independents. We don't have that anymore. We just don't have that. And I don't foresee it returning. I foresee no return of that. I foresee people lining in the streets of Virginia and Richmond and saying, we're going to be babies and cry and whine and show you that we have big guns. And we're going to try to scare everybody by showing you. We're going to show this to the crazy thing is they don't understand that every human being can do that. You know, it's not exclusive to Republicans, or, you know, it's not exclusive to MAGA people. Liberals can go out in the streets with guns. Liberals can go out with improvised explosives. Liberals can engineer failures of systems and shut down across the board society. Things can happen that don't make life comfortable for any sector of this society. And if people see a hopelessness because of the actions that are being taken by politicians these days, that could very well happen. And I really do foresee that that's where this country's heading. And I don't think that the people who are in charge right now, Republican or Democrat, are fully fathoming that quite yet. They're very near-term, very short-term thinking, which amazes me. But if they're drunk on power, the power has completely to the point that they think that they will never, ever lose their power. And that's a bad calculation on their part. So I don't want to be dire, but I do want to say that we've seen this around the world not so long ago, and very recently, as a matter of fact, that when people reach their breaking point, you see them in the streets. People reach their breaking point. In 1776, people reached their breaking point in this country, and they rebelled against authority to gain freedom and independence. It's not that far off. It really isn't.
That's a very dire outlook on things. And I wish that there was a whole lot about that, because honestly, it would make number one, it would make for a great pod, and number two, it would probably make me feel better about myself. But I wish I could really disagree with you. I can't. I can disagree. I can nitpick and disagree with you, which I'm probably going to do. But I can't disagree with your premise. You made a whole bunch of good points. And you started off talking about whenever we were younger, right? And how there was always compromises reached. And I think that was done totally and completely out of necessity. I'm not exactly sure if it was a necessity generated by what we thought was the greater good, as much as it was a necessity, because if I don't give you this stretch of road, if I don't give you this mile of road in 6 months, whenever I need a mile of road of my own, I'm not going to get mine. And so I almost thought the idea of these compromises were always a very selfish thing. But I don't mean that like in a negative selfish way, if that kind of makes sense, right? I gave you yours. So in return, you give me mine, right? I used to play this game with contractors all the time whenever I was in the civil field, right? You always give a contractor, especially a GC on one job site, you know, you always kind of threw them a bone, right? Because you knew you're going to run into this GC on another job site, or, you know, you're going to get yourself in a pickle, or something isn't going to work quite right, and you're going to need them to help you out. So, you know, I'll help you out with this. You know, okay, I know this isn't exactly what you bid on, but I'm going to sign off on it because I'm going to need something down the road. I don't know what it is, but I know I'm going to, because I played this game long enough. I know it's going to come. And you saw that, I think, you know, back in the day. Chris Matthews on MSNBC always tells a story about Tip O'Neill and President Reagan, and how these were two people who absolutely hated each other, right? For people who don't remember, Tip O'Neill was Speaker of the House at the time. And whenever President Reagan was shot and was taken to the hospital, the first person he saw whenever he woke up was Tip O'Neill, who stayed in his hotel room, his hospital room. I wouldn't leave. And the first thing he heard was, whenever he came to, the first thing he heard was Tip O'Neill asking, "Mr. President, how do you feel?" You won't see that anymore. They hated each other. They were not very fond of each other, but they respected each other. Mitch McConnell shown from the time he was the minority leader, whenever Barack Obama was in office, when he got reelected, or when he got originally elected. And the first thing Mitch McConnell does is sit, gets behind a podium and says, "It is my goal and my job to make him a one-term president." Now, to me, that's grounds for impeachment. You know, that's just the big thing going on, because you showed from day one you had no intention of governing. You have no intention of being the person who does the compromise. You have no intention to being Barack Obama's Tip O'Neill, right? You were not going to give in. You didn't care. And so, you know, you made everything had to be 60 votes. You played this game. You basically, for all intents and purposes, you became a whore in the Senate. The ground rules were set then. And even whenever Obama's biggest battles seemed to be with, and I'm sorry, I can't remember who the Speaker of the House at the time was. Big Smoker. I can't remember his name.
Yeah, tan guy from Ohio.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm sorry.
John Boehner.
Boehner, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, Boehner seemed to be against Obama as a politician, right? He was his Republican rival that he had to convince, that Obama had to convince in order to get the Republicans on board with anything, and he was going to play hardball. Now I see a Republican side, and the Democrats to a certain point, but not nearly as much as the Republicans, who their sole purpose, right? And I've said this before, their sole purpose is to simply own the libs. That's all they want to do. They figured out a long time ago that they can get that 5 or 10 second soundbite on Fox Entertainment. They're going to get support, and they're going to get money thrown into them, and they're going to get reelected. Mitch McConnell doesn't care about where this country's going. He doesn't care what the historic significance of his scam and this impeachment thing is. He doesn't care that the potential for his party to not sit in power for the next 100 years means nothing to him. It means nothing to the person sitting in the Oval Office right now. He could give a shit less what happens to the Republican Party. He really could. He could give a shit less. The only thing he cares about is how he's going to make out as president of the United States. What's in his best interest? That's all that guy cares about. All Mitch McConnell cares about, for whatever reason, and I still don't understand what it is, all he cares about is being reelected. That's it. And he thinks what he's doing now is going to get him reelected. And if he is the majority leader in the Senate whenever this country is burning in flames, and as you stated, people going into the streets, he doesn't give a shit because he's still the majority leader. That's all he cares about. All you're watching this bullshit that you see. Frank, let me ask you something. You're an attorney. I don't even want to know how many times you've been in a courtroom. Whenever you had anybody where you knew they were innocent, did you ever stonewall anything? Did you ever try to rig this thing? Or did you sit there and you say, you know what, we want you to see everything. In fact, we'll make it easy for you. We'll give you everything. We'll make things so easy for you to see everything that's happened and everything my client had to do with all this. Hell, you know, we'll even bring the monitors in so you can watch it on TV on big screens, right? You don't even have to watch the little, 27 inches. We'll spring for the 50 inches so you can see the whole thing in glorious 4K, right? Or do you sit there and do you hide it?
No, absolutely not. And there's a variety. There's two big reasons why. One is you want to get your client back to normal again. You want to get your client back to life again as they knew it quickly. And you want to prevent any possibility of there being some slip up, some situation or chance where they could be incarcerated for a period of time where, you know, when you're incarcerated, when somebody's incarcerated, I mean, it's the, and you and I have talked about this in the past here on the pod. I've told you how against incarceration I am. Even for the people that, you know, I would go so far as to say that I, you know, can't stand, and I won't say hate because I don't want to spend that much energy on anybody, but, you know, the people that I can't stand their actions in this world. And I think they've done horrible things to humanity. I still haven't done time incarceration because it's just a horrific, horrific thing, and people don't understand it unless they've been there. But the bottom line is, you don't want a client having the possibility of being incarcerated if they don't need to be. You can prove their innocence quickly. If you prove that they have nothing, you do that for their sake. And you do it to get them out of the situation as quickly as possible. And I don't want to go on too long, but I want to tell you real quick. I had a guy who was accused of assaulting a police officer in Beaver County.
And this guy was a rough guy. Okay, he would be the kind of guy that would be on your mat and would hold his own physically with anybody. Okay. Mm-hmm. And he wasn't going to be given the benefit of the doubt by any jury because he was first heard talk, first few words he would say, he's not going to sugarcoat anything. And he looks like the typical Sammy the Bull Gravano guy. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
But bigger. And the first thing I had him do when we were at the preliminary hearing in his case in front of a judge in Beaver County. It was a Beaver County judge or a Beaver County police officer who claimed to be assaulted. First thing I had him do was almost sometimes counter testify. Now, will we hear Trump testify about this? No. But I had him testify. And while the prosecutor was listening to him testify, he pulled me aside on the break and said, I'm dismissing these charges. And I said, why? He says, because your guy's one, he may be rough around the edges, but he's telling the absolute truth. He said, there isn't a jury alive that once they hear 5 minutes of him testifying, it's going to believe my guy over your guy.
Wow.
You know, he got in there and he said, yeah, we wrestled around like two bears, but it wasn't just me. He's like, this guy wasn't, if he wasn't wearing a uniform, it wouldn't even be a question that I was defending myself. And we're rolling around in the streets in Beaver County, and I'm thinking to myself, here I'm wrestling this police officer, you know, for my life. And yeah, you put your story out there. If you know you're innocent, you put your story out there. And they're hiding from that. I mean, they're doing everything under their power to hide from it, aren't they?
Yeah. Yeah, they absolutely are. You know, you're looking at what's going on here now. And I'm looking at, and let's face it. Everybody on the planet knows Trump's going to get off, right? Everybody on the planet knows it. People, some idealists may not want to accept it, but they know it, right? Everybody knows he's going to be acquitted. First of all, I think that is all that all by itself is a very sad statement, because as I've argued from the mountaintops, what he's done and what he is continuously doing is a whole hell of a lot different than getting a blowjob, right? And if you remember correctly, and people for whatever reason choose not to remember this part, whenever Ken Starr was first brought on board as special prosecutor, it wasn't because of a blowjob, right? It was because of a land deal. And then all of a sudden this dress shows up and Monica Lewinsky's a household name. I wonder what would have happened to the Democrats, the Democratic senators, in that trial, if they decided that they didn't want to hear from Monica Lewinsky and they weren't going to allow anything she said and weren't going to allow her to testify. Well, I think, you know, with the times, I think we would have known what would have happened, right? All these clowns would have been voted out. Or a few of them would have survived, but for the most part, they would have been voted out. But again, that was before the time of Fox Entertainment. And I honestly believe, Frank, that the only thing that these people care about is what those three idiots on the couch in the morning are going to say about them. And what that knucklehead that's on opposite Rachel Maddow is going to say about them. I really don't think they care about anything else. I honestly don't. They sure as fuck don't care about their country. And they sure as fuck don't care about their constituents, because they figured out a long time ago that as long as Fox Entertainment says something good about them, they'll just keep getting votes. And besides, they're Republican and they're nice little lemmings anyhow, so they're going to vote for whoever has the R behind their name. So these guys don't have anything to worry about. And again, the lack of courage that you're seeing from these people to just face what's going on. If you're going to vote the way you're going to vote, that's fine. You know, you're going to vote that this guy's innocent. Okay, fine. Stick that in your back pocket. Okay, pull it out whenever it's time. But until then, show everybody what happened. Show the whole thing. Don't be doing this shit in the middle of the night. Don't be saying, you know what, we're not going to have witnesses. Don't be doing that stuff because you already know the outcome. You already know what the outcome is going to be.
And this is what's going to drive people nuts. This is what's going to drive people. I think, just as you said, I wouldn't. We know. Prove it. We'll let you prove it. If they'd said that, I wouldn't wait.
I don't understand it. I don't understand how you can have grown adult human beings, right? Grown adult human beings who are going to stand there and take an oath whenever they have already decided the outcome. Does this oath not mean anything to you anymore? Are you so flippant about what your word and your responsibilities are that they took an oath, they signed their names in the books, they did all this, and was it all just for show?
You know? Yeah, and the idea that they think that people are this dumb. Like I said, just be actually honest. Tell us that this is what you're going to do because you don't care. You want your guy to stay. You believe that we can prove this. You believe that the Democrats can prove that he made this call and it was inappropriate. He asked for a favor and withheld the money illegally, but we're not going to impeach him for it. Like I said, I could almost accept that.
Mm-hmm.
Don't lie and say you're going to give a fair chance.
Yeah. Yeah, me too. Me too. I guess my question that I have, because we've already, everybody on the planet's come to the conclusion that he's getting off. And this is really a loaded question because I thought about it and my immediate answer wasn't what it was after I thought about it for a minute. This thing's going to get over in a few days or a couple weeks. So say let's take a couple months. The amount of time I don't think really matters all that much. But it's going to take X amount of time. And he's going to come back. The Senate's going to come back with an acquittal. Probably Republicans have 53 House seats and Democrats have 47. So it's probably going to come back 56-44, you know, something like that. There's going to be two or three that move over to the Republicans because they're chicken shits in red districts or red states. Because they're, you know... I shouldn't say that it's only the Republicans who are fucking cowards. There's a few Democrats that are too. You know what? Before I do that, let me ask you this much. Let me ask you this. Well, I think it's a pretty safe assumption. You can tell me if I'm wrong. That all 53 Republicans are going to vote to acquit. Would you say that's a fair assessment?
You know, barring some kind of outrageous news dump.
Yeah.
Barring some kind of outrageous information dump that hasn't been quite
hitting the papers yet, I would have to agree with you.
Okay. If John McCain was still alive, do you think that that would still be 53?
No.
Or do you think he would pull enough over to the Democratic side? Well, I'm not saying it would change. I'm not saying the outcome would change, because that's what, six? That's asking a lot. What would be five? Because he would move over. He'd have to pull five with him. He'd pull Miss Lindsey over.
Just to change rules. Just to change rules, not to convict.
Right, just to change. No, I mean to convict. Because you can change all the rules you want. This has already been established that he's getting on.
To convict, you need 66.
Oh, you need 66? Okay, well, forget it then. It's not going to happen.
Yeah. Right.
Okay. The Republicans this election in 2020 have 23 seats up for re-election. So 23 states are going to be choosing the next, be voting for a senator. How many of these 23 do you think still get their, are going to keep their seats? I'm not asking for specifics. I'm just saying, just give me a number out of 23.
I'm going to give you a number. I believe, the number will be close to between, keeping their seats. I'm going to say at the low number 9 and at the high number 15.
Okay. So you're looking at, they're going to lose 12, minimum. They're gonna lose 12 seats minimum, or half of them.
Yeah.
Basically, they're gonna lose half of the seats.
Yeah.
I don't think there's enough seats in the House that are up for re-election that could change the power structure there, if I'm not mistaken. I might be wrong, but I think that the Democrats are gonna be able to control the House even if they lose everything that's up this next term. I could be wrong, and if I am, I apologize, but I'd be willing to bet some money on that. If you see this and I see this, and probably everybody who's listening sees this, and again, you may agree, you may not. But let's just say it's not half, Frank. I agree with you. It's probably, they're probably going to lose close to half. Because let's face it, Susan Collins is out.
Arizona's out.
Yeah, McSally. Yeah, she's out now. She dug her own coffin there. I honestly think even before all of this shit happened, I really believe that Amy McGrath was going to beat Mitch McConnell.
I think he's, barring some kind of cheating, and serious cheating. Yeah. He's losing.
Yeah. Well, yeah, we're making, and understand, we are making a whole bunch of assumptions here. Why are they still doing it? Why are they still doing this? Right? If they're going to, McConnell's out on his ear, I hope, God willing. But who's, what the hell's her name that's going against Susan Collins? Oh, Gideon, right? Sarah Gideon. Gideon? Yeah, I think that's it. She's going to wipe the floor with Collins now.
Yeah.
Okay. Because Collins was barely holding on as it was, and this just made it hard for her, right? This is gone. She's jumping off the cliff. Why are they doing it? If they know that this shit and everything they're doing, they're going to lose their seat because people aren't going to put up with it. Why bother? Why not be honest?
Well, McConnell thinks that this foreign influence is going to keep him in power one way or the other, whether it's cheating to rig an election to keep him in, or it's going to keep Trump in power for 4 more years. And look, Trump appointed Mitch McConnell's wife to a huge position, cabinet position. He believes that even if he gets dumped, he'll have Trump to fall back on, who will appoint him to stay within the White House somehow. So he thinks he's safe one way or the other, I think. The other guys, they just can't see it. I think they're lost in the middle of the echo chamber that they're in. They think that they live in the MAGA world, and that it's just going to rule the day forever. But here's the other thing. Not only is this the truth bombs killing their chances, because people can't stand this sense of injustice that's going on right now. And it's pervading across party lines. It really is. The other big thing is this. The economy is a joke. And you can't listen to Kramer. You can't listen to, and I listen to it because I want to hear information that's going to help me personally. And I encourage everybody to do that. But you can't listen to the Bloombergs of the world, the Bloomberg News Channel, because they are focused on profit growth of companies and GDP. And those numbers are being juked by quantitative easing. And I don't want to get too technical with people, but I'm just going to say this. It comes down to this simple. The banks, the central banks, and the people pulling the strings economically in the world, there are people that do pull the strings economically in the world. They refuse to let interest rates rise, and they are releasing actual paper dollar bills, $100 bills, $500 bills, paper bills to banks to put into circulation. And the bills that are being circulated are not being circulated into the public. The banks are investing them into stocks. So it jukes the economy. It makes the numbers look great. And they go into companies and CEOs, et cetera. The one percenters gain this money because it's being put into banks, and it's being put into bankers' hands and big bankers' hands. It's not being circulated to the American public. So what happens is the reality sets in with people in Kentucky, West Virginia, Mississippi, Alabama, et cetera, that when you look at your bottom line, and they're going to start doing this, they already are doing it. They already are doing it. And this is the scary news for, and you know who just talked about this? Tucker Carlson actually just had a moment of honesty, intellectual honesty, and said that the real people in this world, in this country, have not seen a benefit. They haven't seen their personal pocketbook grow, their personal bank account grow. And we quote unquote, the conservative side, is in danger of losing them because they haven't followed through on their promise to them. And I will tell you that it's too late, because now you've got this machine that has been going in this direction. They can't stop this quantitative easing. They can't stop circulating money, because then it'll pull the rug out from underneath the bankers. It'll pull the money out from the companies that want to reinvest into their own stock company, into their own stocks. So they're on a crazy cycle, and they can't put the money back into the workers. And the workers are now seeing this sham trial, and they're seeing that their bottom line hasn't improved. Patsy, they're fucked. They're fucked.
Sounds like it. Sounds like it. So they're fucked, and they're just going to be the good Republicans and just toe the line.
Yeah.
God, I wish I could be that blind. You know?
Sleep a lot better.
Yeah, that's the truth, right? I saw what you mean. I was talking to a guy today. Or I'm sorry, let me rephrase. I was talking to him yesterday down at the downtown YMCA. And he was an older guy. Probably a few years older than us, right? Probably mid-50s, maybe late 50s. Who wanted to get into I want to say it was a sales position at a certain a steel manufacturer here in town. And this manufacturer normally hires through a temp agency out of Hermitage. And but he got in, he was talking to the secretary. Apparently he said the right things, or maybe she just saw his age and his experience, because he had his resume with him. And so she told him to hold on a second. He actually got to talk to the president of this company. And he went on and on and on to talk about how the conversation with this president went. That wasn't a formal interview by any means. But this president talked to him about they're not hiring anybody right now because they're on a hiring freeze. How orders are not keeping up with expectations that it was supposed to be. Just on and on and on down the line. And what I found very interesting is the company that I work at is probably a mile and a half up the street from this steel company. And our boss said the exact same thing. Our owner said, it was verbatim. I promise you, these two don't hang out together because, you know, the owner of my company I work for lives in Florida. But it was verbatim. It was absolutely the same thing. And I'm sitting here and I'm thinking, how is this economy so great that we're laying people off? Actually, you know what? You know who we're laying off? This is how shitty it is. We're, you know, they hire folks, especially like in our shop through a temp agency, and you're basically paid through the temp agency for like 90 days or something like that, right? So they had seven or eight guys that just got off from the temp agency payroll and got on our payroll. And whenever it was time to lay off, this last round of layoffs, those are the guys that got laid off. And the folks that were still being paid through the temp agency stayed on. Right? That's pretty shitty. But that's how it went. And I agree with you. This is not the best economy in the world. I don't see too many people around here. Now, granted, you know, we live in Mayberry. We don't live in a big city. I'm my part of Mayberry's far more rural than your part is. I don't see these folks getting ahead at all. I don't see them doing much to I don't see how their lives have improved in the last 3 years. In fact, at the very best, Frank, it stayed stagnant. And that's being kind. So I agree with, you know, everything you said about this economy and how it's a piece of shit. And yeah, people aren't losing jobs, but no one's getting ahead. Everybody's treading water. Well, that's not going to do very good whenever all these prices and everything start to go up, which is happening. And people are starting to get hit a little bit, and they're starting to get hurt in a little bit. And I almost think that Trump would be better off if he was impeached. You know, if the Senate did find him guilty. Because 6 or 8 months from now, I don't think it's going to look too good for him.
No. And what I was going to say is right now, minimum wage is $7.75. And there are half gallons of milk in most grocers' produce aisles, dairy aisles, that can reach $4 and $5 for a half gallon.
Yeah.
So you're talking almost 2/3 of 1 hour's worth of somebody's labor for a half gallon of milk.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I just don't get it. And we have these, you know, folks who want to argue against labor unions, labor organizations that try to improve wages for people, so, you know, improve people's lives, improve their wages. That's free market economy. And then they want to argue against the government imposing a minimum. We can't have both ways. You got to have one or the other. And I would rather have unions. I'd rather have unions impose upon the employers and say, look, these are skilled workers, or these are workers you need to fulfill the jobs that you have. And you're going to pay them what the market bears. You're going to pay them because we know you're making trillions of dollars as a company. You're going to pay them in this company. So that way it's not going to hurt the mom and pop shop that's down the street selling, you know, Huggies and juice boxes, and they've got, you know, the brother and their sister running a little store, a convenience store. They can't afford to pay, you know, $15 an hour,
mm-hmm.
but they're not making $1 trillion either. But
right.
And then, you know, company CEOs making $34 million in one bonus, and half his workers aren't making a living wage, a union would correct that problem.
Oh yeah, and I promise you, both of these owners that I described, they're not hurting, and they haven't been hurting for a long time. And anything that's happened hasn't put a dent in anything that they have, not at all. Wow, that's a really sad way to end this podcast. But Frank, I finish this off and then come back full circle. I don't think people are going to go out in the streets and riot. Okay. You saw those idiots in Virginia. Shitheads who couldn't last 5 seconds on my floor, walking around with their guns and their Kevlar vests because they're trying really, really hard to be strong. You know what I don't understand? I've gone on like women's marches, right? If these clowns are the standard, if these Virginia Second Amendment idiots are the standard, should I not be like strapping my wife to my chest and carrying her all over whenever I'm doing this women's march? You know?
Yeah.
That's what it should be, right? Like if I had a sister or whatever, so, just jump on my back. I'm going to carry you through because anyhow, I don't get it. I'm sorry. I think people are too beat up. I think they're too tired. And I think that it's going to be a Herculean effort to get a turnout big enough to put this whole thing to bed. It's going to have to wait till November because nothing's going to happen before that. Okay? It's not. We're going to have 10 more months of this shit. But
I do think you're right in the short term. I do think that's absolutely right. I think people are already resigned to the fact that I would guarantee, I can't guarantee, but I would be willing to put good money on the idea that there are a lot of people who would normally consider themselves well-informed and want to, you know, keep abreast of what's going on in current events, mm-hmm. who will refuse to watch this trial because we all know what the outcome is going to be, right? So mm-hmm. why waste the time and infuriate yourself? But what they will do is they will go to the polls and they will vote. Just like we had a real factual blue wave in 2018. That's the way you're going to see it in 2020. And I do believe what you're saying is accurate. I think that will be the quick result of all this. The question though becomes, if we don't see a change in society, if we don't see a change where wages get to go up, because look, we're fighting ingrained beliefs that have been indoctrinated into, for goodness sake, the state of Wisconsin vilified unions. The state of Wisconsin. Wisconsin was a bastion for organized labor for a very, very long time.
Yep.
But, you know, Scott Walker or whatever his name is, the Walker that was the governor there for, you know, was able to jump on the coattails of Rush Limbaugh and other people who indoctrinated people for so long and brainwashed them that they got Wisconsin to go against unions. So it's not just a national thing. It's not just a Senate and House of Representatives or even the presidency. We're fighting a long, long, long battle of brainwashing and indoctrination. And unless there's a significant change in the power structure and the fact that people can actually make a living wage, I am concerned that there's going to be some ramifications longer term. But yeah, I don't want to dwell on it. I think you're absolutely right. We'll get a short-term result that's going to be the result of this nonsense that's going on right now, and that'll come in November.
Yeah, I hope so. I really do. We'll see. But and again, you know, all of this is contingent upon nobody's cheating.
Right. And one last thing I'll say about what you just said. Somebody made a great point. I wish it was my line. It's not my line, but I'll co-opt it. Hmm. It's really not Trump that's on trial right now. It's the Senate Republicans that are on trial. And they're falling into the trap of letting the American public see how corrupt they are.
Yeah, I you're absolutely right. I just really, really hope that it makes a difference. I really do. I hope it does. I hope seeing just how corrupt and cowardly they are. Because I'm not convinced that they're all corrupt. I think most of them are just cowards. I hope whenever people see that, they make a change. I really do. I hope so. Anyhow, Frank, great pod today. Before we put this thing to bed, is there anything you want to say?
Register your family to vote. Register your friends to vote. Make sure that that all of the people that you know that care about the future of our country are registered for 2020. Make sure they didn't get knocked off the rolls if they live in Ohio. Just make sure your friends and family are registered.
Yeah. Yeah. This thing doesn't work unless you're involved. So with that being said, I would like to do like Frank and I do every week, like we say every week, like Master Grant and I say every week, your time is very valuable to you. And the fact that you're willing to spend any of that time with us means a great deal to us. It honestly, truly does. So until next week, same bad time, same bad channel. If you don't get the reference, you're far too young to be listening to this podcast. For Frank and myself, goodbye, good luck, and God bless.
Tune in tomorrow. Same bat time, same bat channel.
Thanks for listening to Holy Sh*t with Frank and Master Patsy. If you like our show, please subscribe and leave us a review on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. And don't forget to support us on Patreon. Join us again next week when we discuss the next thing that made us say, holy shit.